Radio Prague News. A Romani family in Ostrava has become the victim of a Molotov cocktail attack. The Czech finance minister has designated the year 2015 as the earliest possible date for the adoption of the euro, and more than half of Prague's restaurants and bars are planning to ban smoking on their premises starting July. A Molotov cocktail was thrown into the home of a Romani family in the North Moravian town of Ostrava late on Saturday night, Czech TV reported on Monday. The bottle landed in the bedroom of a 14-year-old girl who was able to extinguish the burning bottle before it caused further damage. Nobody was injured in the attack. The perpetrators are yet unknown. Police are investigating the case as a threat to public safety. The Czech finance minister, Eduard Janota, has designated the year 2015 as the earliest possible date for the adoption of the euro. Mr. Janota told Czech TV on Sunday that the Czech Republic would first have to lower the deficit of public finances below 3% of the country's GDP by 2013. That would involve adopting a number of cost-cutting measures as well as changing the structure of the state budget. According to estimates by the finance ministry, the state budget deficit should this year drop to 5.3% of the GDP. Last year, it reached 6.6% of the gross domestic product. Pavel Hlinka, the president of the Czech Association of Restaurants and Hotels, said on Sunday that about 50% of Prague pubs and the majority of upscale restaurants are planning to change into non-smoking establishments as of July. Within a new law aiming to curb smoking in public that takes effect on July 1st, restaurants and bars will be obliged to display stickers that indicate whether smoking is allowed on their premises or not. On Saturday, customs officers in the Moravian town of Brno uncovered counterfeit designer purses and clothes valued at about 6 million Czech crowns, a police spokeswoman said on Monday. Officers uncovered the fake designer goods during a routine inspection at a local market, where they discovered a retail stand that was unlocked and unattended. After searching the stand, the police found a secret storage area behind a mirror where the owners had hidden the counterfeit goods. The find is one of this year's biggest. The stand's owners could now face a fine of up to 5 million crowns. And now for a brief look at the weather. The coming days will be cloudy with snow in most places and daytime temperatures between 0 and plus 5 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka and this is the end of the news.
Listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniel Azarová. Coming up in today's program, the Social Democrats unveil an ambitious election program. A gay rights organization demands the right for gays to adopt children. We'll have a fresh report from the One World Festival of Human Rights documentaries currently underway in Prague, and this being Monday, bring you the week's sports news. Later on in the programme, we'll hear from an Irish poet and teacher who feels very much at home in the Czech Republic.
I suppose I feel more at home in this country at this stage than I do in Ireland.
All that coming up, so do please stay with us. The Social Democrats launched their campaign for May's general elections with a bang over the weekend. At a conference in Teplice on Saturday, they unveiled an ambitious programme promising to put the Czech Republic among the top 10 countries of the European Union. Jan Richter has the details.
You cannot not win if you have the right team. The song performed by Social Democrat leaders on a theatre stage in Teplice, led by the 1980s hitmaker Michal David. Originally written to celebrate the Czech hockey team's triumph at the Nagano Winter Olympics, the tune might now accompany the Social Democrats to victory. Their program, approved unanimously by party delegates on Saturday, promises to cut the state budget deficit by half by 2013, abolish fees for visits to the doctor, bring back loans for newlyweds that were popular during communism, pay seniors a one-off extra pension, and reintroduce sick leave payments for the first 3 days of sickness, among other things. The program provoked instant criticism from all other parties. The major rivals, the Civic Democrats, compared the pledges to a Czech mission to Mars and said the Social Democrats themselves must realize the promises are not realistic. The Christian Democrat leader Cyril Svoboda said the head of the Social Democrats Jiří Paroubek was behaving like a control freak. Analysts estimate the cost of all the promises at some 47 billion crowns. To pay for all that, the Social Democrats want to get more EU funds and raise taxes. Political analyst Jiří Pehe believes that the Social Democrats will have to back out of at least some of their promises should they win at the polls.
It is a typical social democratic program. It means it puts emphasis on social programs. It is trying to generate revenues by increasing taxes rather than by cutting taxes or keeping them down. So it is a kind of program that one would expect from a social democratic party. On the other hand, of course, we all know that what the Social Democrats are promising at this point is probably not 100% realistic. It is an electoral platform, and if they win the elections, they will probably have to be more down-to-earth than in the program they unveiled.
The campaign style might be cheesy and the promises unrealistic, but they seem to work well with Czech voters. Most recent polls put the Social Democrats strongly in the lead, with their major rival the Civic Democrats lagging behind by more than 10%. It's as if the right-of-center party never fully recovered from the humiliating defeat when their government was toppled during the Czech EU presidency last March. Torn between the followers of President Václav Klaus, who founded the party, and the current leader Mirek Topolánek, they came up with long-term strategy for the Czech Republic, but they somehow haven't managed to get their campaign off the ground. Jiří Pehe again.
I think that the Civic Democrats really have a problem. Moreover, of course, they are not really helped by the fact that the Czech Republic faces an economic crisis, just like most other countries in Europe. And in those situations, it seems to me, people tend to lean towards parties that promise more security.
To counter the Social Democrat offensive, Mr. Topolánek said his party would launch the hot phase of the campaign in mid-April. Meanwhile, Social Democrat leader Jiří Paroubek already started planning who his coalition partners might be in the next government.
Jan Richter with that report. Now, a gay association has called for the Czech legal landscape to be redrawn, allowing gays to adopt children. The demand is backed up by legal analysis and a 2,000-signature petition calling for action. Chris Johnstone reports.
Brno-based gay and lesbian grouping STUD has sent its demand for action to Minister for Human Rights and Minorities, Michal Kocáb, the Office of the Government and Parliament. At the heart of its demand is the 2006 Law on Registered Partnerships, or so-called gay marriages. While the hard-won act gave civic and legal recognition from the state for the first time to same-sex couples, it also paradoxically represented a step backwards by including a ban on adoption of children by individuals in registered partnerships. That is a situation which the Czech gay lobby now urgently wants to remedy. Martin Strachon, one of the leading members of STUD, explains why.
Registered couples are the only group in the Czech Republic that cannot adopt children. With regard to advice on the constitutional situation, the ban appears to be against the Constitution.
Mr. Strachon says that the question is more one of principle than of pressing demand for adoption by same-sex couples. He cannot say how many members of registered partnerships want to take advantage of a change in the law.
In the Czech Republic, there are something like 1,000 registered couples. So this is not a question for a very big group of people, but it amounts to a question of principle because the law creates an artificial group of people who, on a legal level, have lost a right and possibility enjoyed by other citizens.
Studd has taken expert advice, which it says suggests that the current discrimination against individuals in registered couples is a breach not just with the Czech constitution, but also with the European Convention on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms. Adoption by gay individuals and gay couples is legal in many parts of Europe already. The Brno Association also cites expert studies which maintain that there is no proof that children brought up by same-sex couples turn out any differently from those raised by more conventional couples. Mr. Strachon says the Gay Association wants to see action taken by the current Czech caretaker government before lower house elections in May. It points out that government legal advisers have also highlighted the problems with the current situation. But while Minister Kotsab says he backs the call for a rewrite of the current law, he has been wavering over whether now is the right time to go ahead with such a controversial move. The Catholic Church and Christian Democrat Party have already taken outspoken stands against such a change. With the minister recovering from a personal scandal and the election date fast approaching, it's difficult to see the demand for action bearing fruit anytime soon.
Chris Johnstone with that report. Now, time to see what's going on at the One World Festival of Human Rights documentaries underway in Prague.
Mike Campbell is about to take on a man who has brought death to thousands.
Strike! We'll protect you! Strike!
A trailer for Mugabe and the White African, one of the documentaries being shown at the One World Festival. It follows Michael Campbell, one of the few white farmers left in Zimbabwe after years of land seizures, as he takes the brutal regime of Robert Mugabe to court at the Southern African Development Community, or SADC. Campbell wins his legal battle against the dictator, but at great cost to himself and his family. Ian Willoughby spoke to one of the directors of Mugabe and the White African, Lucy Bailey.
I think when we made this film, we wanted to bring attention to the whole Zimbabwe issue. We were aware of what was going on inside Zimbabwe, but of course it was always going to be so difficult to do with a total press ban. You know, just people weren't making anything about Zimbabwe, and we were determined to try and do that and to make a proper feature film that would play on a big screen.
A lot of the film was shot covertly. How much danger were you in?
The film was very risky to make. It was all shot covertly, so that meant that we had to smuggle ourselves and our equipment into Zimbabwe. Yeah, it was risky because at any time if we'd have been found out or been caught, we would have been thrown into prison. So we had to be very careful with our logistical planning, essentially. And we had to be one step ahead of the authorities and come up with inventive ways of getting ourselves in and out. And we were literally smuggling equipment by, you know, welding camera lenses into car doors and this kind of thing to get it in. And we had to ship the camera equipment down the Zambezi at night on a boat, so quite difficult.
At the end of the film, Michael Campbell, this white farmer who's an elderly man, he has won a legal case against the Mugabe government, but his farm has been burned down. Was there any achievement in his legal battle, do you think? Did he actually achieve anything?
I think, yes. I think that the legal precedent has been set, and despite the fact that the Zimbabwean government have ignored it, you can't ignore the fact that legally they are in the right, and that this new, you know, the SADC tribunal is a brand new human rights court, and those five black African judges made the right decision that day on behalf of every citizen in Southern Africa. So we have to be hopeful. Yes, the Zimbabwe government have ignored it, but I think you have to start somewhere, and it's a slow process building this whole human rights culture.
And how do you think the rest of the world should deal with Robert Mugabe?
I think the rest of the world are scared. Particularly, it's very difficult for the West, for the UK, for the US, because Mugabe plays the colonial card and keeps saying, you're interfering, you're colonial. People mustn't be frightened by that, but it is very difficult. But at the end of the day, this is a total dictator, and it's all about political power for him. It's not a black and white thing. Mugabe is suppressing the majority of his population.
Lucy Bailey, co-director of Mugabe and the White African, was talking to Ian Willoughby, and he'll have another interview from the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries for you on Tuesday. Now, this being Monday, it's time for a summary of the sports news, this one with Jan Wellinger.
And we begin with downhill skiing. Czech downhill skiers clinched a sensational win in the World Cup Nations team event in Garmisch-Partenkirchen, Germany on Sunday, just edging fellow finalists Switzerland. The race, a parallel slalom format, sees four skiers compete per team. For the Czechs, that meant Šárka Záhrobská, Lucie Hrstková, Ondřej Bank and Krzysztof Kriesel. After four races, the Czechs and the Swiss were tied at two apiece. But Ondřej Bank, who was undefeated in the heats, secured the title by posting the fastest overall time, the official tiebreaker. On the way to the win, the Czech Republic had to defeat not only Switzerland, but also Austria and the USA. Turning to football, in the 19th round of the Gambrinus Liga on Sunday, Sparta Prague came close to losing to Mladá Boleslav, but in the final minutes managed to turn their game around. Sparta were trailing 1-0 but got back in it in the 86th minute on a corner kick. The ball was sent to the far post where Kushnir capitalized. And then in the 92nd minute, Libor Sionko got the ball in the penalty area and was able to send it under the crossbar. The win means Sparta remain in the running for this year's league title, a point off leader Steplice, who drew 0-0 with Slavia in their weekend matchup. That game saw three players injured, including Slavia forward Riste Namov, who suffered a horrific leg break after clashing with Teplice's Markin Klein. With a double fracture to his leg, the Macedonian player could be out of action for up to 1 year. In international football, Czech striker Milan Baroš, out since last October due to injury, returned to Galatasaray at the weekend and got off to a winning start, scoring once to help the Istanbul team defeat Ankaragücü by a score of 3-0. The win put Galatasaray atop the Turkish league standings. Turning to ice hockey, Slavia and Liberec have become the last two of eight teams to reach the playoff quarterfinals of the Czech Hockey League. Slavia won a grind of a final match in their best-of-five series against Litvinov, winning 5-3. The game also saw the gloves come off between Litvinov enforcer Roman Vopat and Slavia's Jiří Vašíček, the latter coming away heavily bloodied. In the other series to reach the quarterfinals, Liberec embarrassed Čiske Bogivice 9-1 to edge their rivals in the best of five. And finally, in sport, Czech athletes posted disappointing results at the World Indoor Athletic Championships in Doha. Roman Šebrle finished fifth in the heptathlon. The 36-year-old former Olympic and world champion was slower in both sprints, but posted good performances in the shot put and the high jump. Šebrle, who is the current decathlon world record holder, said he had not expected to do all that well given recent injury. Czech athletes also finished outside the medals in other events, including the women's pole vault and the women's 400-meter relay. And that's all the sport for today.
A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, as regular listeners will know, on Mondays we offer you an in-depth interview with an interesting personality. This week, Sarah Borůvka's guest is not Czech, but Irish, although you could say he has found a second home here in the Czech Republic.
The Irish poet Justin Quinn has been living in the Czech Republic for close to two decades. His latest collection of poetry, Waves and Trees, has been translated into Czech, and he himself has also translated the work of Czech poets, such as Petr Borkovec, into English. I talked to the poet about translating poetry and how living away from your home country affects the poetry he writes.
I suppose I feel more at home in this country this stage than I do in Ireland, beautifully my home country. It affected me very strongly at the start, living here. I didn't know how to process the information or the experiences that I was having. For the first few years, I lived in a tower block at the edge of the city, and a lot of my work remained within the confines of the apartment walls. So when I walked out the door, I was surrounded by tower blocks and a state, the edge of a city, and a completely different language as well, which is, for a writer, a difficult thing to process if you don't hear your native language around you, because many writers, they feed off contemporary speech. So one of the things I had to do was learn to stop feeding off contemporary speech in the way that many writers do. So there was a lot of things I had to adjust at the beginning of my stay.
Okay, and in terms of style, I believe that for a lot of Irish poetry, it can be pretty divided between very formally classic or conservative poetry and then more innovative schools of writing. Where do you see yourself, and do you think such a division applies to contemporary poetry?
It's a very good question, because I think the situation is changing. Irish poetry up to, I suppose, my generation has been very conservative. All of the attention has been directed towards those poets who rhyme, they use meter, they use old forms like sonnets, and experimental poetry has been very marginalized up to this. I feel with my generation that people have greater freedom. I see now in the work of my contemporaries that they feel fairly relaxed about picking and choosing between different styles. So I think things are changing in Ireland.
To come back to life in the Czech Republic, you already touched upon your life in the tower blocks of flats. And one collection of poetry that you published is titled Privacy. I believe it's inspired by this life. Is there a privacy in such a huge apartment block?
Well, there is a kind of privacy. The people try to patrol the borders of their privacy very vigilantly. I found it bizarre to step inside the lift in the first few years, and sometimes the neighbours would not greet me, so intent they were on maintaining their own privacy. And of course, once you walk in the door of your apartment, you can forget that you're on the nth floor of a very horrible concrete box, and you create a little world for yourself and your family there that's in huge contrast with the world outside. But there are also interesting spillages. The concrete walls are not so thick. You hear the neighbours banging round upstairs doing all sorts of things, the whole range of human activities. Even it was bizarre for me, having been brought up in a house, to know when they went to the toilet, because you would hear the toilet being flushed upstairs. So it was a bizarre mixture of privacy, but also the barriers between privacy weren't where I grew up.
And is there a similar theme or area of life that you drew inspiration from for your latest collection of poems, Waves and Trees?
Well, I'd like to think that I got out of the house over the years, that I was able to get out into the Czech landscape, the Czech experience, and found out basically how to process this experience in a way that I didn't know before, as I said. Part of, I suppose, the main thing that helped in that process was translating the work of Czech poets into English, that they allowed me to see how I could use this experience. I suppose foremost amongst them would be the Czech poet, contemporary Czech poet, Petr Borkovec, whose work I published in book form about 2 years ago. And that was a real revelation to me, to see how he used the landscape, he used the Czech language, and he also drew upon a European poetic tradition, which I immediately recognised. So that was a kind of commonality I had with Borkovec's work, and that was a great help. And as the title of the book indicates, it's much more fresh air, it's waves, it's trees. It's also in the title, there's an attempt to connect the waves of the sea where I was brought up in Dublin on the coast with the marvellous forests in Central Europe that stretch all over the place, which I very much love walking through for days on end.
You've mentioned Petr Borkovec, you've translated his work, you've closely collaborated, and now you yourself have become the subject of having your work translated. What is it like to see your work in Czech in a different language?
It's a very strange experience. The translations were done by a Slovak poet who's been living here for about 20 years, Tomáš Fürstenzeller. He is extremely good at translating rhyme poetry, and he rhymes in the translations. And he's a very close friend of mine, and I enjoy hugely working with him. It's an excuse, the translation's an excuse to go out and drink a few beers and talk about poetry in general. And so it was lovely to see the work that he did, but also it was rather strange to see in some cases he would actually improve the originals. And I would have to rather reluctantly tip my hat to him and pick up the bill for the beers because he was basically so good. And so it was a learning experience for me, just as I learned a lot from translating Petr Borkowitz into English. So to see the dedication and the elegance to which Tomáš took to the work was really humbling and fun as well.
And I believe last fall you had a poem of yours published in The New Yorker. How was this publishing? How did this come about?
Traditional way, you just sent it off to the editor, and they liked it. There was no strange alchemical processes involved, as far as I remember. And I was delighted to get a poem in this magazine, which has kind of mythical status. When I was growing up, when I first began writing poems, I had never seen a copy of The New Yorker, and yet by the age of 20 I had sent at least 3 submissions there, because I knew that was a place to send things. So yeah, no, it was really nice to get a poem in there after how many years? 20 years, yeah.
So would you mind reading it for our listeners?
Delighted. The poem is entitled Seminar, and it's about teaching American literature to Czechs in Prague. Seminar. I carry America into these young heads, at least some parts that haven't yet got there. Hawthorne's Salem, Ellison's Blacks and Reds, Bishop's lovely lines of late summer air. The students take quick notes. They pause or dive for dictionaries and laptops, or turn to ask a friend as new words constantly arrive. The more they do, the more complex the task. They smoothly move from serious to blasé and back again. I love the way they sit and use their bodies to nuance what they say. I lean forward to catch the drift of it. When it's ended, they'll switch back into Czech, put on their coats and bags, shift wood and chrome, and ready themselves for their daily trek across a continent and ocean home.
That edition of One on One with Justin Quinn brings us to the end of today's program. Should you want to check out our webpage, then go to radio.cz. We will find all our programs in text and sound, plus a lot of interesting information about the Czech Republic. Should you like to contact us about anything you heard in the show or simply get in touch, then the email address to write to is english@radio.cz. And you can also write to Vinohradská 12, postal code 12099, Prague, the Czech Republic. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and take care.